Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you, and welcome to another episode of Perspectives on Healthcare. Today, we are having a patient's perspective. This is coming from the Patient's Perspective Marathon. It is number 25, and we are hearing from Isabella McLeod. She gives us a Canadian perspective, and I think you'll find my conversation with her fascinating. So without further ado, here is my interview with Isabella McLeod. Welcome. What is your name?
Isabella McLeod.
All right, Isabella. And where are you from?
I'm from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada.
Fantastic. And Isabella, thank you so much for being a part of this and for joining me today. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your kind of background and experiences with healthcare, please?
Yes. So I'm a former registered nurse. I was a nurse for 23 years. Started off in general internal medicine and dermatology inpatient, and then I also did simultaneously outpatient dermatology clinic ambulatory. Then I moved for 3 years. I then moved on to the burn unit and plastic surgery, which was intensive care nursing, microsurgery, and oral surgery on the side. So it was pretty intensive, as you can imagine, working in the burn unit for 5 years. Had a little bit of a back injury, took a little break for a year or so, and then I ended up in inpatient ophthalmology, which is eye surgery and eye care. For a year and a half, and then I transferred down to the outpatient ophthalmology, doing perioperative nursing. So we handled all getting everybody ready for any eye surgery, retinal, cataract, ruptured globes, anything to do with the eyes, and then I looked after them postoperatively. So, and then I ended up developing Lyme disease after 23 years, so I had to stop working, unfortunately. So,
okay. If it's not too personal, do you mind talking about your experience as a patient having Lyme disease? What's that been like for you?
So I really got really sick. I didn't realize what was going on with me. I was very healthy. I just had a baby 2 years prior to becoming ill, and I was super healthy and busy and all that jazz. And got really extremely fatigued, had excruciating joint pain, so much so that I was bedridden. Ended up so anemic, my hemoglobin was like down to 70, which is really low. And I lost 60 pounds within 2 months, which was, you know, very unusual for me. If I looked at a chip, I would gain 10 pounds. So it was, all of my friends and neighbors were looking at me and I looked terrible. And they're like, what is going on with you? We know something really bad. So I went to the doctors, did blood work. The only thing that was showing up was I was anemic. Then they thought I had cancer. So got checked out with bone scans and everything for that. Ended up being negative. I was still very sick. The doctor really didn't know. My family doctor didn't really know what was going on with me. So I took it into my own way, and I started researching my symptoms. And I was showing up with like Lyme disease, in my opinion. And it wasn't very well known about 12 years ago. So ended up calling a doctor from California, because the Americans were more versed with Lyme disease. Talked to her over the phone. She reviewed my blood work and she said, I think you do have Lyme disease. Why don't you come here to San Francisco and I'll assess you. We have Lyme labs here. You can get all your blood work done. You'll have to pay for it. And I said, okay, I will, because I was so desperate to get help. And I did, went to see her, went to the Lyme labs in Los Altos, had like $1,200, $1,500 worth of Lyme work done. About 2 weeks later, came back. Yes, I definitely had Lyme disease. I had Bartonella, which was a co-infection of Lyme disease. The day after I got off the plane, I ended up taking the medication. I got my prescriptions filled for the Lyme illness. Ended up in atrial fibrillation, where my heart was racing out of my chest. Could not get it under control. Ended up in emergency. Could not get my heart under control for 12 hours. And they ended up cardioverting me and shocking my heart back to rhythm. And then in the end, they diagnosed me, I think probably a month later, with heart failure. So which they didn't know what caused it. And I actually said, well, I know what caused it. Here's the blood work, and it's Lyme disease, and it can affect you on every level, neurologically, cardiac, you name it. It mimics a lot of things. And when I continued to take the medication that the physician prescribed for me for Lyme disease, and I ended up in liver failure from that because it was too much. Ended up coming right off everything, doing some naturopathic medicine. And basically my heart did improve, and I'm actually way better, but I still have chronic Lyme because I was so far gone with the Lyme disease that I haven't quite ever recovered from it. So, but it saved my life being my own advocate. So.
Sure. So talk to me about that. What was the interaction like where you are taking a medication that's being prescribed by a doctor in another country, and then that medication is causing you issues. It's causing you heart issues and causing you liver issues. And how is that being handled by the, you know, by the doctors that are helping you up at home?
Yeah. So my family doctor wasn't overtly impressed with me when I told her I was going there. Then I was like, oh, well, you're not helping me here. And I'm going anyways, because that's kind of the girl I am. Plus, I was a nurse. So we're kind of pushy people and know our own bodies and our own health. But I did get the results back. She was like, oh, well, she was glad I went. And then she knew the heart failure was from the Lyme and not the medication. So she was like, well, thank God you did go. I'm glad you stood up for yourself and all that jazz. And so was I. So, you know, initially she was mad. In the end, she was happy because I saved my own life, basically. So, yeah.
And more power to you for that. So have you met any healthcare heroes along your journey?
Well, I'll be vain and I'll say I met myself because I used to work in the burn unit. And we did save lives to critically ill burn patients who would never otherwise survive without intensive care nursing and grafting and being in the hospital for months. And we did save a lot of lives there. And my own hero, because I saved myself.
You know what? The fact that you are a self-advocate and stood up for yourself and literally saved your own life, and the fact that you're serving people that are in the burn unit, I have no problem with you self-nominating as a healthcare hero. It's completely allowable by my standards. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
What does quality healthcare mean to you?
I think it's quality healthcare to me is when I was a nurse. I really, I tried to give my 110% to all my patients. I really did very good assessments on them, especially working in the burn unit in medicine. They were very sick people. Really analyzing them, all their blood work, all of their x-rays. If something occurred with them that was, as soon as something abnormal was occurring, I was right there to do an intervention, whether it be get on the phone, call the doctor, make sure, EKG, blood work, x-rays, anything that we both thought was necessary. If they were really sick and did a major turn, of course, I'm right on the phone with the doctor, have them come in and to assess. And I just think it's really important to, even if it's not even a major thing, if you notice your patient, if you have them for a few days and you notice they're off, I usually, when I was a nurse, we had our patients for 4 days straight, so you get to know them a bit and sometimes not, but if I couldn't put my finger on something, then I would still call the physician and say, this person's acting different. They're feeling different. They're extra tired. They're extra in pain. Whatever they needed, I was always on there because little things can mean a lot sometimes. So, and if you miss it, that could be absolutely to the detriment of your patient. So I always, evaluated the patients constantly. So.
Okay. The tweetable moment, the little things can mean a lot. Can you talk to me about that? Or, maybe give me some generic examples of what you're talking about.
Probably when I was on medicine, we'd have a lot of elderly patients and they were quite, had a lot of health issues and everything. And all of a sudden they would just saying, I don't feel that good right now. And I'd be like, okay, what's going on? And check their vitals, make sure everything's going on. I check them, their temperature's through the roof or their blood pressure's through the roof, different things like that. And then all of a sudden they turn really quickly, like they actually can arrest or their breathing got so bad they had to be intubated. And I never, ever I would just go pshaw to those patients. I would, make sure that I did a major assessment. I checked their blood sugar if they were diabetic. I checked everything because when they're saying this to me and I knew them, especially. I made sure, and I actually picked up on a lot of stuff with some persons going into pulmonary edema or congestive heart failure that they never had before because they were on different medications or they had a reaction to a medication that they were given that was new. You know, things that could be life-threatening and how to intervene with them. So I did pick up on stuff, you know, that occurred with patients like that. So.
Yeah. And that's so, so valuable. And so having somebody that is paying attention to you and listening to you and seeing, even because sometimes people are dismissed and, you know, it's pretty amazing. And it's good to have someone that's paying attention to what's going on with you.
Yes. So, go ahead.
I was wondering, what is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
Specifically with Lyme, like my issue with Lyme disease or any illnesses, if you cannot find what's going on with the patient, you shouldn't dismiss them, you know, thinking they have a psychological, emotional issues. There are illnesses that are rare that occur. They're not always just your basic illnesses, like you're diabetic, you have a heart problem, you have a basic neurological problem. You really have to go out of the box. You don't dismiss the patients. I would want that for my family members. I have several family members with some interesting abnormal issues. One had an eye problem and she was just off. They thought it was her eyes. Ended up, she was beginning to have dementia. There's me with Lyme disease, my Lyme was not showing up under regular blood work. I knew something was very wrong. I think it's really important for everyone to be their advocate as well. You know, and doctors should listen to their patient, especially if they've had them for a long time, and don't dismiss them as psychosomatic or, and you know, because they're not following, you know, their usual ABC 1-2-3 diagnosis. So always continue. I think that's really quality, you know, of care when you don't give up. You don't just dismiss the patient. That's super important in my opinion. I want that for myself, family, anybody. So.
Yeah. So tell me more about it. Like, don't give up and don't be dismissive. Can you talk to me more about that? Like, is that an experience that you have had yourself, or is it an experience that you have, that you've seen in others? Or tell me about that, please.
I've had, like with the Lyme disease as well and other issues. I think it's, like I said, personally with the Lyme, I did not give up. And if I did, I wouldn't be here. I'd be in a coffin right now and not here for my children. I have two children. I ended up having a divorce over my illness because initially my ex was not believing I was ill. I will never give up on myself. And if you know you're to thine self be true, never, ever, you know, have somebody tell you no matter what there's something wrong, they're mentally ill. You're not really sick. If you know you are, you're knocking in all cylinders. And especially me where I was a nurse, you absolutely always be your own advocate, because doctors and nurses aren't perfect in healthcare professionals. I mean, we try to do the best that we can with the information, but there's always some unusual new illnesses which are occurring that, you know, don't always fit the box. So I really think that, you know, doctors should always try to think out of the box. If they don't understand something themselves, they're always learning as well. Healthcare professionals are always learning new, techniques and illnesses to deal with and diagnostic tests. And even with Lyme disease, they're still developing new ways to test for that. They're more into PCR testing, like with the COVID now, because that's the gold standard instead of just, blood work that if you're too far gone in Lyme, then it doesn't show up. But the a PCR shows up the actual DNA of the Borrelia bacteria for Lyme disease. So, you know, stay up on all of your, you know, elements and don't ever dismiss patients. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting to hear you talk about this with, you know, making sure that medical professionals are educated, because the technology is changing all the time and the information that's available is changing all the time. I would say there's another side to it in which patients need to educate themselves as well. Because there has never been greater access to, to information and to be able to have your own knowledge and information and move forward with that and almost be as educated about your condition as your doctor is. So,
just to interrupt there for a second, interject, but we have a Lyme education of Nova Scotia that we put all of the, you know, symptoms, testing, what blood work's available, what doctors are available, because it's still really hard to get treatment for chronic Lyme. Canadians might have to go to the States. Okay. People, the prevention's like, if you get it from a tick, so huge prevention. You're in long grass, wear long pants, long clothing. Check yourself if you're hiking right afterwards. Prevention's huge with this as well. So,
okay. Excellent. Lyme education of Nova Scotia is LENS, I'm assuming, but wonderful. So, hey, Isabella, thank you so much for being with me today. I appreciate you sharing, and I respect your perspective on healthcare.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's a pleasure being here. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.